This is Agent versus Linder.
Let's get ready to rumble! Let the fight begin. If you're a top real estate agent, broker, lender, or coach, this is your podcast. This is Agent versus Linder. If it's about real estate or the lending industry, it's fair game. This is Agent versus Linder. And now the host, Ron Pippett.
Welcome to today's episode. Today, I am changing seats. Instead of being the interviewer, I am being interviewed with Jack Mize at Influencers Radio. I'm a little bit humbled to be on this program simply because he's had the likes of Kevin Harrington, Ryan Dice, Kerry Murphy, Frank Kern, just to name a few. So I'm humbled and excited that they've asked me to be on this show. What we would discuss is mortgage myths and truths, and especially for first-time home buyers in today's market. After releasing this podcast recently, it was picked up by many news agencies such as CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox, and CNN. So we thought we'd re-release this as an Agent versus Linder podcast. So enjoy the show, and I hope you get some value.
You know, when it comes to buying a first home, there are a lot of myths, misconceptions, and fears facing first-time home buyers. And if you're thinking about buying your first house, you probably have a lot of questions like, how much can I afford? How much down payment do I need? Can I even qualify to buy a house? Well, you're not alone. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, because my guest is mortgage lender Ron Pippin. Since 1995, he's been helping first-time home buyers in Utah get the right financing for the right house that their family will call home. Ron is the branch manager and team leader for the Pippin team at Cardinal Financial, and he has been listed in the top 3% of mortgage originators nationwide. But more importantly, he's been an educator and an advocate for the thousands of families that he's helped navigate the home financing process. Ron, welcome to Influencers Radio.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate you having me on today.
Well, you know, I appreciate you because the one thing that you are really good at, like I mentioned, is educating. You know, it's a lot of times you hear stories in the mortgage or just about any financing where, you know, papers are put in front of people. Here, okay, what do you want, A, B, or C, without a lot of education. And one thing that I think a lot of first-time home buyers struggle with is just the unknown and just not knowing the questions to ask. So that's what I'd like to do today is kind of put those out there. So just to help them become more informed around that process. So what I'd like to do is kick it off by asking you is, what do you see as being some of the biggest myths and or misconceptions when it comes to financing a first home?
Well, I think there's actually several myths and misconceptions. And one of the things that I find is a lot of people think that buying a home requires a lot of money down. There are a lot of lenders or there's lots of places you can find online that say you need 20% down or more to buy a home. And in today's environment, that's really tough to come up with. 20% on a home is a significant amount. And just a lot of people, a lot of us just don't have that. And so there are different programs that allow people to buy a home with much less. In fact, sometimes with zero down, that allows them to become a homeowner. And so that's one of the biggest misconceptions is the down payment issue.
And so when you say, because I know you see a lot of the headlines, you know, buy a home with no money down, you know, zero down payment. And I think some people may not know exactly, you know, what that means. So can you explain what a no money down or low money down home loan is?
Sure. Fair. That's a fair question. So the no money down or low money down, there are specific programs that sometimes the government sets up, and I'm going to cover some of them right now. So some of those are just the easy programs, such as veterans. If you're a veteran, a VA home loan requires no money down. If you live in a rural area, there's a USDA product that requires no money down. But then what's less known is some of the government grants and down payment assistance programs that are available that also require very little or no money down. Many states, including the one I'm in, Utah, has a first-time buyer program that they couple the down payment assistance with the regular mortgage. And so it covers the entire down payment and sometimes even the closing costs. So you're bringing in very little or no money down, especially if the sellers are willing to pay some closing costs, then you literally can get in with no money down. And so that's the down payment assistance, and that differs from grants. So there are some grant programs that are available as well, and they can vary depending on the state, county, and even cities. And some of the cities and some of those counties have grant programs available anywhere from a couple thousand dollars on up to $30,000 or $40,000 that can help people get into a home based on their income, based on where they live or where they're going to live. And so it really is takes away the barrier of buying a home with that 20% down. So that allows people to get in very quickly and not have to put off home buying process.
You know, so I guess, you know, that those definitely open up opportunities for people. But let's say somebody has $5,000. Is it still to their advantage? Are there trade-offs or additional cost or some of those unknown pitfalls that people take on when they do a no or low money down? So if someone has $5,000, is it still to their advantage to do that type of loan, or would it be better to do something where they put that down?
No, so absolutely, that actually is an advantage to them, just because when you're talking about a down payment, there's a difference between down payment and closing costs. So the down payment can be zero, but there still may be some closing costs that need to be paid for that may not be considered or may not be paid for within the down payment assistance programs. So that $5,000 can help pay for the closing costs. So it's really an advantage if they have some money down. There are some programs that we can wrap all of it in, and they don't have to have any money down. Well, I'm gonna back that up. When I say no money down, some of the programs require a little bit of money down. Sometimes they'll say, "Hey, you got to have the first $500 or first $1,000 to put down," but you know, when you're talking $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, and somebody and another lender is saying, "Hey, you're going to need $25,000, $1,000 or $2,000 is quite a difference and opens up a whole lot more opportunities than having that $25,000 or $30,000 down. So it's a huge advantage if you have some money down, because then you don't have to worry about where the closing costs going to be paid. Are coming from where? Who's going to pay for that? Is the seller going to pay for them? Because in today's environment, if you're asking the seller to pay some closing costs, and all things being equal, and there's multiple offers on the table, and you're asking the seller to pay closing costs, then your offer may not be as strong as somebody else's. So if you have a little bit of money, you don't have to ask the seller to pay for closing costs. It's a huge advantage and you still could qualify for some of these programs. And so you can just marry those two together and make your offer just as strong as anybody else's out there.
So there's options. If you have money, it opens up more options, I guess. It does.
Right. Now, if you have lots of money, so if you have the 20% down, oftentimes these programs are not going to work for you because they want to save those programs for people that don't have the 20% down or don't have near as much money down. So if you have a large amount of money, the programs honestly probably are not going to be, that these programs are probably not going to be to your advantage. But if you have $5,000, $10,000, you would still probably qualify for almost all these programs that are out there.
All right. Well, I guess the next thing I want to get into is what I would imagine is maybe some myths or misconceptions. There's probably a lot of them around buying versus renting. And, of course, there's a lot of first-time home buyers who have been renting. And so do you have any guidance on what someone's paying in rent, how that correlates into buying a home? Because I think some people think that, I can't afford to buy, there's all this, there's mortgage and insurance and all the stuff that they don't necessarily pay as a renter that they think might add to their costs. So can you give those kind of pros and cons and just to contrast the differences and advantages between buying and renting?
Sure. So the advantage, some of the advantages aren't necessarily financial. Some of them are more convenience and more emotional. So what I say by that, and I'll get to the financial ones here in just a second. So some of the advantages of buying over renting is if you want to change something in the house or plant flowers, if you want to paint a wall or hang up a picture, you're very limited as to what you can do when you're renting. And when it's your house, like, you can do whatever you want. You want to paint a room purple? Yeah, go ahead. But as a renter, you don't have that option. And so sometimes, or same thing like when I say planting flowers, I know that there are some HOAs, which is a homeowner association, won't allow you to do some things because it's your house, and so you can do whatever you want. But as a renter, the landlords may not allow you to do whatever you want, outside or inside.
I guess you are the landlord at that point. You make the decisions on what you want to do as far as paint, knocking down walls, all that stuff that you can't do. And I guess it gives you a little bit more that long-term feeling and I guess create something that feels like home at that point.
Right, right. As a renter, when I rented, I know that it just wasn't, it never was really home. It was just a place that I could go for the same reasons that I couldn't do a lot of these things. I wanted to change something. I wanted to, if I wanted to put in a different flooring or if I wanted to put anything, even as simple as doing some landscaping, it's really difficult to do anything when you don't own the home.
Yeah, and I guess even if the landlord will allow you, you're just investing in someone else's property, right?
Yes, good point. And that's part of the financial reasons is when you start doing work on somebody else's house, the landlord, if they do allow you to do that, you're just putting your money into somebody else's equity.
Yeah, well, so that's I guess a pretty clear one. Now, when it comes to the financial part of that, what you're putting out monthly and what those consequences, what's actually leaving your pocket or coming, or what you get to keep in your pocket, what's the difference there? Can you contrast that in the buying and renting?
Well, the buying and renting, so there are multiple things that can be included in a mortgage. So your property taxes, your homeowner's insurance, and your principal and interest. And I know you don't think of that, those kind of things in those terms when you're renting, but the landlord has to make a profit. And so you're paying the landlord's property taxes, homeowner's insurance, the taxes and insurance in your rent. And so oftentimes you can qualify for a home at pretty close to the same or maybe even less than you're paying in rent, because now it's your home and you're not having to mark that up like the landlord's doing in order to make a profit. And now it's just your home. And so the difference in monthly is normally pretty darn close when you look at the type of home you're living in, or maybe even less because you're not having to mark that up to make a profit. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I guess basically whether you know it or not, you're paying those costs anyway. They're just not line item out on your in your rent agreement, right?
Right. Exactly. And what a lot of people don't know, too, now, I'm going to preface this with, I'm not a tax advisor, but oftentimes when you are owning a home, you can now itemize your taxes, and there is some tax write-offs for interest and for other things that you don't get when you're a renter, and so your tax base actually goes down a little bit. And so when you look at it in that perspective as well, not only are you saving money on buying a home, but now you're saving any more because your tax base can go down.
So, yeah, so it could actually save you money, at least on a month-to-month basis when you're doing that. So someone's renting, they should feel comfortable in knowing that if they spend that same, they could probably buy a house for that same amount of money on a monthly basis or even less in the same type or quality or level of home that they're renting, right?
Right, right. And that's important to understand that if you want a nicer home, you might have to pay a little bit more for it, but now you're building as you're making that monthly payment, you're now building equity, which is just you're building, saving money in the form of your home on a monthly basis. Whereas if you rent for 3 or 4 years and you move, you get nothing back out of that. And if you look over the last 60, 70 years, there are only a handful of times when the real estate actually has dropped, but it only took a couple of years for that drop in the price to level back out to where it was before that drop, and then go go up. And the reason why I'm saying that is that if you look at history, real estate almost always goes up. Like I said, there's a few exceptions to that rule, but almost always real estate goes up, which means that when you move after 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, now you're taking money with you. You sell your home, you have equity that is given back to you in the form of the sale of that home. And so now you have $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 plus that now you have that you would not have if you rented.
Well, I think that those advantages are pretty clear. One thing I'd like to get into that I think stops a lot of people before they even get started when they're considering buying a home is there's probably a big question of, you know, can I even qualify to buy a house? Am I even qualified to be a homeowner? What do you see as being some of those obstacles or perceived obstacles people have that may stop them from even trying? I mean, obviously, I think some of those would be, my credit good enough or even, issues about, I haven't been in my job long enough, things like that. Can you address those and any others that you see that are stopping people from even exploring this option of purchasing their first home?
Sure. When you asked me the question at the very beginning, that was one of the things that I thought of too is credit. And so credit is important. No doubt about it. Credit is important. That doesn't mean you have to have perfect credit. You can have some deans, you can have some late payments, you can have, now if you file bankruptcy yesterday, that's going to be a problem. But if you filed bankruptcy in the past and you're past that, that doesn't necessarily mean that's a problem anymore. So I think some people are just afraid. They're afraid of no. But what we tell them is, if for some reason you can't buy today, we help you put together a plan so that you know when you can buy and you have a clear path of what you need to do with credit or with your income or whatever else issue may come up. We at least put together that plan for you. So now you can follow this plan, and by the end of 6 months, a year, whatever the plan is for your situation, you'll know what you need to do in that time frame to get yourself ready to buy. So to address the other issue of income, of how long you have to be on your job, most of the time, that's not as big of an issue. As long as you've been working, and the biggest issue I see comes up is somebody may have went from a W-2 job or an hourly job, an hourly or salary, and they started a brand new business, and they've only done that very recently. They don't have a history of being self-employed. Sometimes they have to be self-employed long enough so that the underwriter considers their income stable. But that's all part of the process. That's all part of the plan that we put together to show you what you need to do in a specific amount of time so that you can buy. So I think the best thing that people can do is just call. Just let us look at whatever situation you're in and let us help you with a plan. And I think most of them will be pleasantly surprised that they probably will qualify right now. But if not, we're not going to just say no. We're going to say not right now, but in this time frame you can, and this is what you need to do to get there.
Well, I think that's one of the things that really makes you stand out is the fact that, like I said at the top of the show, that besides just, you know, being a mortgage lender, that you really are an educator and an advocate for the success of your clients, but also the people that maybe not ready to be your clients, and that you give them that plan. And I think that really makes a big difference in the lives of a lot of people. One thing that I wanted to ask you is, you know, back to some of the financing and that money down. Just to be clear with people, that like these low money down, no money down programs, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can be broke and still buy a house, right? I mean, you still have to have something or income or that kind of thing to qualify, right?
Yeah, that's true. You still have to qualify. So even if you qualify so some of the grant programs don't have a lot of the qualifications that you have to have for a loan, but you still have to qualify for the loan. So if you aren't really making any money, or if you're unemployed, or if you're on unemployment, or if your credit is just completely just trashed, you're not going to qualify because you're not going to qualify for the loan part of it. So, but that's where we help you with the plan. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So there's a way to do it. There's always a path. And so for some people,
right.
they may
know the path.
Right. Okay. So I think that's the that's the real magic. There is you provide a map to people that may not have a map. They don't have to navigate this on their own. That they know. You know. So you sit down with someone, and maybe you can go through that so folks understand what that process is. So someone calls you and says, hey, you know, I think I'm going to get a new house. It'll be my first home, but I'm not sure if I qualify. I don't know what this takes. What does that look like? Do you sit down and spend some time with them to assess that situation? If you could walk through that with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So whether that's on a phone call or in a Zoom call or in person, we will sit down and we will obviously gather up some information from you, and then we will do an analysis and give you multiple options. So assuming you qualify, we will give you multiple options, and it makes it really clear as to the advantages and disadvantages of each option. Now, that doesn't mean that the options that we that one option is better than another. They're just different. So we'll provide that analysis, or we will provide an analysis that shows you what's going on with your credit and what you need to do to move forward. So we're and I'll tell you, you had mentioned that this is what sets us apart, which I think it does, because there's not a lot of lenders that do these in-depth analysis. And I'll tell you why I do that. Is when I bought my first house years and years ago, won't tell you how long ago it was, a long time ago, I also didn't have a down payment. And it took me calling multiple lenders to ask questions as to how can I make this work. And it took me multiple phone calls before I found a lender that said, hey, we've got this program that can help you get into this house. And so if it wasn't for that lender taking some time and walking me through some different steps, I would not have bought my first home. I would have just continued to rent. So 26-ish years ago when I got into the house, I remembered that, and I immediately started researching out these kind of programs, because I said, I want to be that lender. I want to be that lender that helps somebody get into their house when other people are saying no. So that's why I do that.
Yeah, that's amazing, and almost in a way, paying it forward, right? And and some of the things that you help people do, obviously, is finding the right financing, understanding what they can afford and that kind of thing. But on the other side of that, what do you see are some of the mistakes or some of those unknown pitfalls facing first-time home buyers that maybe you've helped them to avoid, or ones that you see that those mistakes that first-time home buyers are making out there that prevent them from being successful in getting that first home?
Okay. So before I answer that question, I want to make clear that a first-time home buyer is anybody that has not owned a home in the last 3 years. That is what defines a first-time home buyer. So if you've owned a home in the past, but you haven't owned one in the last 3 years, you now can take advantage of the first-time home buyer programs.
Oh, wow.
And just so you know, that some of these first-time buyer programs, they're not all just for first-time home buyers. Some of them are for people that are currently moving from one home to another. And so there are still programs out there for those as well. So just want to make it clear that this isn't just for first-time home buyers. There are programs for lots of other people. So some of the pitfalls that some people find themselves in is buying a car before they go qualify, or getting really excited and going out and spending money on furniture before they buy their home. Say, I'm going to need new furniture. I'm going to go buy it now because there's a sale. Well, every time you do that your credit's going to take a hit, and then your credit score is lower, which could affect your qualifying. But also, now that you have more debt, it can qualify. In the industry, we talk about debt ratios, which is just a ratio of how much income you have versus how much outgo. So we look at that, and if you just bought a car that's now $400 a month, well, now your debt ratio has gone up, and that could qualify you for less. So those are probably some of the biggest issues is just watch your credit, watch what you're spending, watch, go purchase things prior to getting a home. Do that after, because the qualifying for a car, much easier than qualifying for a house.
Yeah, so I guess a lot of people get that. And I guess that can even happen between the time that you initially qualify. Are you talking about, even let's say you go through this and, all right, here's what you're qualified for. That doesn't mean, okay, I'm qualified, now I can go buy all this stuff, right? Is it like, no, wait till right. you actually close and have the keys to the house before you do that stuff?
Exactly, because we've had that happen where people get excited, and that's why I mentioned that is people get excited and they say, oh, we're going to move into our house next week. We got to have furniture to get in to put in this house, and they go and put it on credit, or they go, especially at this time of year when there's all these sales going on, it's getting close to Christmas, and they go and one of the stores they go to, you're spending $100 there, and they say, hey, you're going to get a 15% discount if you open up a credit card with us. And so then they pull the credit, which lowers your score a little bit, not significantly, but now you have a new account with a balance on it and a credit inquiry, which can lower your score, which during the process is going to make a difference in your loan. So it's really important not to do that, especially when you're in the process.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, that really, I think, speaks volumes to the, you know, having someone like you on the side guiding you through that, because it sounds like there are a lot of ways to make mistakes through that critical process, you know, even, you know, once you qualify. You know, Ron, I got to say, you know, just, you know, what you're doing is tremendous. Like I said before, making a big difference in the lives of a lot of people. And I want to thank you for coming on and, you know, being generous and sharing this information. And I know that you, you know, work primarily in the Utah area, but I know there's a lot of people you know, this has probably opened up their eyes to some of the possibilities that they have that maybe they didn't think they could be a homeowner. So how can someone find out more about Ron Pippin and the Pippin team and how you can help?
Well, you can call me or text me, and that phone number is 801-628-7667. Or you can find me at pippinteam.mortgage, and that's our website, so you can go there and get some more information. And I know you said that we're primarily in Utah, although we can close loans in any state, but you're right. We are located right here in Utah, and so that's our primary target market. But if you have questions and you're from another state, call us. We can help you out there, too.
Oh, fantastic. Ron, once again, thank you for coming on and sharing this information today. It really will help a lot of folks, so thank you.
Thank you so much, Jack, for having me on.
All right, folks, definitely. If you have any questions or you think you may not qualify, but you know what? You may. And that's what Ron is so great at, is helping people and educating them. And he is a true advocate. So you got nothing to lose to check it out. So again, that's pippinteam.mortgage, pippinteam.mortgage. And we'll have the link right there on the show post.
You've been listening to Agent versus Lender. We put it all out on the table, as you can clearly tell, but that's what makes us unique. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit us up on Facebook at Pippin Team or Ron Pippin, on Instagram at RonPippin9002. If you have questions or comments, email Ron at thepippinteam.com. This is Agent versus Lender, signing off.